Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to take a little side trip off the highway. We're going to be talking about nature around us, what is around us, and how we reflect and how we communicate with that nature and that information that we get maybe from trees, we find from religion in churches, we find when we walk a cemetery. All of the mysteries are all around us. Sometimes we are so disconnected, we don't even notice it. People will say, oh, yeah, I know, I go to the park all the time. Well, did you notice that tree on that side? Did you notice that bush on the side? Did you notice the flowers and the moss growing? I don't know, it's just a tree. A tree is a tree. Well, there's some of us who think of trees as something different. Today, my guest is Deborah Burst. Her books we will be talking about today are The Magical World of Trees, They Love, Nurture, and Communicate, and Spirits of the Bayou, Sanctuaries, Cemeteries, and Hauntings. Deborah, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's a pleasure being here.
So, Deborah, don't you think sometimes there are some of us who kind of do see the mysteries of the world around us, and some will just keep chugging on going through and they don't even notice, right?
Exactly. And, you know, that's one reason why I wrote the book, because I've always been a nature lover. And at the same time, though, I am connected just like everybody else. The computer, I work from home. I'm a freelance writer, photographer, author, so I'm on the computer a lot. Cell phone in my hand, just like everybody else.
Right.
And I, you know, kept having problems sleeping and irritable, you know, just being irritable. And you couldn't seem to find the solution. So about 20 years ago, I just started walking on a nearby, it's called the St. Tammany Trace, and it's a walking path. And it all started to disappear. All of that stress, and your brain starts, I guess, you're cleansing it. And
right.
After doing the research for my book, I learned it's all true. We need nature to survive.
You know, it's really about the resonance and our frequency, too. You know, when we get on this electronic boat that a lot of people are on, it kind of takes us away into a place that of a frequency maybe of things of people saying this, that, or the other, you know. And we go out into nature, and it's sort of like we reconnect with those parts of ourselves that might need a little bit more attention. We think clearer. We might say, oh, I haven't been feeling well, and all of a sudden an answer will come to you when you're in the woods. Or sometimes you will say, you know what, I actually feel better here, so things aren't bothering me anymore. It's really about, if we think about it, everything has a harmonizing frequency, and it's just, are we in balance or out, right?
Oh, definitely. And there's scientific proof of just what you mentioned. For example, within 5 minutes of going out to nature, when I say going out to nature, I don't mean going to get the mail out of your mailbox. I mean really walking in a park or walking in the woods. And within 5 minutes, heartbeat starts to calm down, your blood pressure reduces, and then gradually that frontal lobe of your brain starts to calm down as well. I mean, that frontal lobe of your brain controls everything, and it never turns off. I've even seen research where the scientists are believing that may be partly responsible for dementia. And Alzheimer's, in that when you go to sleep, your brain needs to empty this toxic, you know, constant, all this stress. And if you don't get a good sleep, it stays in there and it stays in your body. Well, nature helps you cleanse that.
You know, I've always been around nature. I grew up in Pennsylvania in the mountains north of the Poconos, and I was always familiar with it. So, excuse me. So I was always familiar with it, and what I would find is that it was always part of me. I always accepted it as normal. It was always connection to me. I used to, look and lay underneath the trees, watch all of the seasons change, and I knew when it was time for school in September because you'd see the shadows from the trees, you know, or you mm-hmm. knew that it was going to be maybe a short summer when things would start changing. You just kind of sensed it. I'm like always in tune with this kind of thing. Even here in New Orleans just this past month, I looked out and I said, why is everything blooming so early again? You know, it's like really, really early this year, more so mm-hmm. than even last year. And if you look, the things that are blooming out now, they will shunt their growth and then they will stop. And you'll notice some of those leaves will not be coming out again in the spring, which we call maybe the end of March or April. They won't be coming out again, and they'll fall off. And what happens is I've seen a lot of trees that are actually half of the foliage that they used to have just from that process. So I think sometimes if we are really in tune, we can notice different things going on in the world around us versus just saying, oh, I don't know, you know, hey, the tree's dead, cut it down, right?
Right, and as you mentioned, not everybody sees the things perhaps you do or I do. They're so busy. They're driving their cars and they see a blur of blue and green, you know, the sky.
Right.
And they maybe for a split second, oh, yeah, it's a pretty day. And then they start listening to the radio and they start thinking about what they have to do. But you are so right. Trees are actually a barometer of what is happening with our world today. I mean, I know the oceans are too, but we can't always see what's going on inside the oceans. Mm-hmm. The trees, they are trying desperately to adjust to climate change, and I devote a whole chapter to exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They, right now, and I agree with everything you said, I'm noticing the same thing. Okay, so we had this blast of cold winter that lasted
right.
for, I don't know, maybe a month. And then all of a sudden we went from extreme cold to extreme heat, or at least down here in the South, not
mm-hmm.
extreme heat, but for February hitting the 80s is pretty extreme. And the trees get confused. And
mm-hmm.
what happens, like you said, is when they start budding out new leaves and then a freeze
right.
comes and it drops off. What
right.
you just explained is because all of that nutrition that was buried in the roots while they were hibernating, all shot up. Then when the leaves die from the freeze,
mm-hmm.
all of that energy was wasted.
Yeah.
And their growth is stunted because of that. So researchers in Europe in particular have noticed the trees are so smart, they're starting to count the number of hours of sunshine and warmer weather and the number of days that it happens before they let those leaves out.
Yeah.
Is that unbelievable? I mean, the trees are almost saying to us, hey, can you help me out here?
I know. You know, it's almost, I know on this show we've spoken a lot about time almost doesn't have a calendar anymore. I noticed myself saying this past week, I said, oh my gosh, you know, 80s in February, I get so tired and drained of all of the heat. It eventually does take a toll, and it's like you feel like you're just dried up, you've had enough. And
mm-hmm.
I instantly came to my mind, I said, oh, don't worry, maybe in the summer it'll be cooler. And I thought, oh, wouldn't that be nice if we would flip that, right? If our calendar would just go away in what we think, and the earth would start making its changes on its own. So in other words, we always have it framed in our mind that February should be cold, and we kind of command it as so, where maybe just the earth has having its own calendar, and it's just saying you need to throw your paper away almost kind of idea.
Well, they do need a certain amount of time to hibernate and to rest, just as everybody does. I mean, we all need our different changes of seasons.
Right.
And we definitely need to celebrate the, you know, the new flowers and the new leaves and walk among the trees and get what has become a common term, the oxygen bath, as
right.
they, you know, give us a fresh dose of oxygen. We need to all do that and plant as many trees as we can. Make sure you plant them, the species that are local to your environment. And when people ask, well, how do I know what's local? Go out in the woods and look. That's what's local. You know?
Right.
So,
right.
So that's important too. And another thing you had kind of mentioned was you tend to, as you continue to walk perhaps the same path, you kind of even get a little numb of everything that's going on and you don't see the small things. And in my book, I mentioned there was a woman who was doing a speaking event across the country, and she brought it even further, and she said, don't take your phone, or at least don't listen to it, you know, or don't look at it. Go inside the woods, bring a chair or just a little, you know, stool, and sit down and examine something really, really
right.
close. Kind of almost like, I call it like when I write, going into a writer's zone. This is like a nature zone. And you will feel, you will almost feel and hear everything. It's just heightened. It's incredible how that can help you in your everyday.
You know,
life.
We used to have the woods around our house all the time. So it was normal to me too, because I would always be in the woods, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the deer would be there also, and, you know, all the birds and everything. And I would always just go in there and sit. And I never realized how, in other words, it was so common that when I was away from it, it was like I never realized that people lived like this without it. Like I lived in Arizona. And when I lived in Arizona, I call it the land of the rock and the hard, you know, down by
mm-hmm.
Scottsdale. And there was nothing that I could find that would compare to that feeling of home, more or less we call it. And I think
mm-hmm.
the feeling of home, what I was looking for, was that nurturing part of the forest, or that smell that you get when you go in the forest, or
right,
when
right.
it's fall, when the leaves are changing, or, you know, even here in New Orleans, when you go uptown, you can smell. It's almost, I would always say, if you could bottle the smell of uptown, you would have nature at its best. You know, it's the trees,
mm-hmm.
they have that dampness to them, and there's just certain trees in there, and it just mixes with all the flowers. Usually you can catch that really dense smell around the end of March, beginning of April.
Mm-hmm.
And
because it's almost like a tunnel. It's almost like
right.
a tunnel. And it's, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's like, it's just a smell that you can feel. It like ekes through your bones. Same thing in the forest, you know. Even here, I would look around, and when we would have a rainstorm with lightning and thunder, you could always smell, you know, a storm coming. And when it would lightning, it would be like you would feel, oh, you would feel invigorated. You would have that sense
mm-hmm.
of, oh, it smells so good. Let me go outside. That's why so many writers write about the smell of rain, the smell of the woods, you know, the smell of grass, the smell of trees. It's because it has that electrical essence that really people can pick up on.
Oh, definitely. And matter of fact, Florence Nightingale had kept a journal. And one of the books I read called Nature's Cure, the author mentioned the journal that Florence Nightingale had written. And in it, she noted that the patients who were placed near a window where they could look outside and see the trees and sky healed much more quickly. And she even quoted and said, they're like a plant. they always move toward the light.
Right.
So even then, she noticed that. And I share some personal triumphs of, friends I know that were just grieving from a loss of a loved one and felt so lost. And they just started walking in the park and in the woods, somebody who never did that. And now they're addicted to it. And it literally not only brought them out of their grief, but brought them to, that list of things they want to do in their life.
Right.
They're doing it. They have more
hope for it, yeah.
Yes, and it was this gentleman even had quoted, he said, "Each step I took brought me away from the darkness into the light."
Right.
And so that's something that everybody, I know people are limited with time, but even just a 20-minute walk, through your local park on your way home from work or something, and there's parks everywhere, that can really.
And I also say, too, about opening windows, you've got to let the air
mm-hmm.
in. I mean, as soon as I get out of bed, my feet hit the floor, within 5 seconds, I've got a window open someplace,
mm-hmm.
Even if it's 100 mm-hmm. degrees out, I'll open it for 10 minutes and then turn the AC on, but.
Right.
It's you just have to breathe in something other than where you are. In other words, breathe in the air around you. I know so many times, I would always, even when it was cold in the north, if it was snowing outside, I'd roll down the window and turn on the heat, because mm-hmm. I just wanted to feel it and smell it and sense it. Or, even in the desert, even if it was hot, it would still be roll down the window and smell it. You could smell the chaparral. And so many different times and places. I think we just have to alert people to say, okay, I know you're really stressed out. What I want you to do right now is roll down the window. Wherever you are, what do you smell? Boom, go there, And then their story changes, and they're not thinking about their woes or what's going on or
right.
how hard or dark things might be. I mean, we use this all the time. And I think it's really about people will say, "Oh, that's just so simple. That's so common. You didn't this, that, or the other." And we said, "Yes, life is that simple and that common. It's just you that's making it so hard,
Right? Yeah, because we're surrounded by everything that's so computerized and so, it seems like everything is so grand now. I mean, we've
right.
lost the simplicity of life. And another reason to open the window. And my husband fusses sometimes because it'll be, 90-something degrees outside.
Right.
I have my window open in the office, in my
mm-hmm.
office, upstairs office, where I have a big window where I can see the trees. And I open the window so I can hear the birds, so I can
right.
hear the sound. I can hear the lightning. I can hear the rain. I can hear the,
mm-hmm.
the wind blowing through the trees, even though, and sometimes I even turn the AC off for a little while just
right.
to bring myself back to nature. And that's another thing, too, that I mentioned in my book. And this goes back to my research also in walking through cemeteries and looking at the history of the graveyards. There are people in the 1800s and early 1900s that lived very long lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's attributed to the fact that they were outside and they did
right.
their work on their own. And
mm-hmm.
true, they didn't have the medical advances that we have now, but then again, they didn't take a whole lot of pills either. And it really astonishes me when I look at some of those headstones and I think, they lived pretty long lives, and it's because they worked hard, and we've lost that. Matter of fact, in 2008, I don't know if people realize this, but we, meaning the world, was declared an urban species. There are more people living in cities than rural environments
mm-hmm.
now.
Right. I'll tell you. And, it's really about being able to be connected with the vital force of the earth And really, when we always talk about, as naturopaths, we talk about the vital force of the body. You know, I'll tell you, we had that really cold spell this year, and I covered over my plants on the patio, and of course, they didn't make it. And there was one tree, it's a pine tree that I had on my patio, and I couldn't believe it. I covered it over, and I said, oh, pine is fine. You know, it can make it in the colder temperatures, no big deal, right? And it was covered with a light thing, and it was not suffocated or anything. It could breathe and everything. Well, when I took it out after 2 weeks and looked at it, it's totally brown and willowed, and it's just, it's not going to make it. It's and what I said when I looked at the tree, I says, oh, you were devoid of light for that long. It wasn't about the cold. It was that I had it covered over it so it didn't get its light energy to be able to stay going. And it was like, oh, okay. Because, you know, when we think about pine trees, they're always tall and they're billowy and they go to the light so big, you know. Very rarely do we see pine trees that are tiny, you know. So
Right.
This one, it just definitely was devoid of the light for too long, and it's just not going to be able to make it. And it was so interesting to watch that and consider it. And they also, I had this huge tree outside also, and they came and cut it down because it's by a power line. And it was, I had watched that tree over so many years and could see cycles in it and different things and how they changed. And when they cut it down, I was kind of like, they showed up one day and it was abrupt to me, and it kind of took me back, and it really was upsetting, and I was crying, and it was like, oh, they're cutting my tree down and everything, you know. I felt like part of me, because we had communicated so much, it was like going away. But anyway, when they cut it down, and I said, you know, as I watched and they were spinning it, all I saw was coming down all of the sawdust. It was everywhere. And what I saw, though, was the sun was shining that day, and it was all like golden glitter. I said, you know what? It's okay. What they did was they just spewed all of its energy around, and that's good. And I guess sometimes to take things and look at it as it's a real cycle of things. We want to hold on to things and say we have to keep them. Or then we come down, we forget about it, and we do it mishappenly. But here, really, I'm saying, you know, look at the cycle of it, you know, about bringing the energy out and using it for mulch and different things like that showed the cycle of that tree. And then the pine tree, it was showing its cycle that I took away its vital force, and that was light. So those are two really important concepts that, you know, when we think about those, when we're out walking, it really relates to us also, you know, the cycle of life, as we'll get into your next book about the cemeteries. It's also about the cycle of life. It's also about the vital force and nurturing in the tree book, right?
Right. And it's funny you mentioned that, because Henry David Thoreau loved pines more than anything else. And I read a book that was written about his journal entries when he lived near Walden Pond, and he had described the cutting down of a pine tree, and of course, in his words, it was pure magic, and he was haunted by it, and but at the same time, he did reflect on what you did, that it a dead tree is just as alive as a live tree. And the reason for that is because that dead tree is feeding its fellow, you know, the seedlings of other trees. It's feeding all types of, you know, insects and, matter of fact, of course, down here we call them lightning bugs, fireflies, other places. That's where they live for a long time until they, you know, when they're nymphs and they're in there feeding. And then it becomes part of the forest floor. And it's, if you, when you're walking in the woods, there's a beautiful forest in City Park in New Orleans. And I see some of the trees that were taken down from Katrina, and they are now like this, it's almost like they're a natural garden with these beautiful flowers that's growing out of the dead trunks, you know? So, yeah, sometimes, and I'm the same way. I've had my, shed my many tears
from all of this urban, you know, destruction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, urban growth and the destruction of nature. But I try my best to look at the good side, and one reason why I wrote this book.
Right. And, you know, it's a really truly about the cycle, too. And your other book, Spirits of the Bayou, that talks about sanctuary, cemeteries, and hauntings. Let's talk a little bit about the sanctuaries. You have wonderful pictures of churches in here. And, you know, my mm-hmm. favorite church is, you know, I was an organist from about fourth grade. I started singing in church and
mm-hmm.
Playing the organ. And I guess I was, eight, 9 years old, maybe. And and it was in a grand church at a pipe organ. And I remember the big stained glass, and it was just me up there by myself. And I'd be so scared, you know, in the morning, it'd be pitch dark sometimes. And I'd go running up the stairs thinking something was going to follow me, you know, and hop onto the stool and turn on the organ and freezing cold. And I'm thinking, gosh, if I look back at that now, it's like, I must have been Wonder Woman. I don't know how the heck I did that, you know. And then I'm singing Latin masses, and I'm going, what the heck, you know. It's almost like it's unbelievable. But then I look at it, and I think about the time that I really cranked up the organ, and I mean, I was singing to the heavens. And after the mass, the priest says, don't you think that was a little bit loud? He said, I think they could hear you a few blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's so much mystery, and there's so much mystique, and there's so much magic and power and love and everything in churches. Don't you think you can almost sense it and feel it if you're open to it?
Oh, of course. Yes, and I've written 3 books, actually, on historic churches. Some include cemeteries, some include voodoo, because voodoo is a religion, a lot of people don't know that. But every church I have been in, and I've noted this over and over again, and I don't care what religion it is, I mean, I've even been to synagogues as well, you immediately feel a presence. And I don't mean the ghostly presence. I mean just a calming presence. And what I described in my poetic prose is you're basically feeling the souls who have been born there, who have christened their babies, who have, you know, weddings and ultimately funerals and all of the lives that, and the special moments in that church and the celebrations. However, I really feel it most, kind of like what you were saying, when I'm in there by myself, you know, without the people, because I'm easily distracted. But if I go in there and just sit down, and I know this sounds weird, but just sit down and listen, that's when you can kind of feel it. And then I'm really, I've always, throughout all of my writing career, I've been very attracted to history and historical architecture. And you start noticing the little tiny nuances. And it may be something like a 4-leaf clover that was etched in this massive column, only it's at the base of the column. So I really recommend, if you have a community that has churches open, again, when you're feeling overwhelmed, just, you can go there to pray, or you can just go there for peace.
You know, the concept of the church in the first place, or the concept of God in the first place in all religions, is I'm here waiting for you, come to me. And really, if you think about it, you place a church in a community and it's always open, and you come when someone dies, you come when someone's born, you come when you have a hard time, you come when you have a good time. So really, that's what the church is the icon of. You know, my favorite church in the city, there's two. Well, it was kind of, and then kind of, I don't know, I felt like they may have done too much upgrading lately, and I just don't feel it anymore, is the church at Loyola. I used to love that church, but now it's kind of, I think they did a little too much renovation. But there's one that doesn't have any renovations, and that's St. Mary's Assumption Church, you know, and the Redemptorist Church, Father Philo's one. And it's when you go in there, there are so many carvings everywhere. You almost feel like all of these I don't know, like there's just so much more walking with you when you're in there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember
mm-hmm.
going through the back of it, through Father Silos, where they have the little kind of place where you just, I don't know, I
like
think there were artifacts or whatever.
It's almost like a small museum of sorts.
Yeah, like little artifacts or whatever there. So I walked through
mm-hmm.
there, and then I went out into the church, and I could sense almost like he was walking down the aisle. And I think
mm-hmm.
What happens is we get these senses and we diss them, and we just say, oh, that's just nothing. But really, we are connecting with those energies in those places, and just to be able to give it a sense of, oh, okay, I feel it, I see it, I hear it, thank you for coming, and then move to the next spot, versus saying,
mm-hmm.
oh, that's weird, or I don't get it, or that was no big deal. I think kind of you're almost dishonoring, you know, the adventure
mm-hmm.
into
mm-hmm.
the mysticism of the whole purpose in the first place, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and then it's important, too, for me to interview people who have been members of the church, like, forever, and have been there, for example, one at Holy Trinity Church in Trinity Episcopal Church on
mm-hmm.
Jackson Avenue in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
They have incredible organist that came from Europe, and he is just mystical. He is incredible. And he is part of the church. And he sits on that organ and he plays, he uses the pedals. He's barefoot because he says he can feel the pedals more. But
right,
he's in tune
right.
with that church.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened up my spirits at the Bayou, in fact, with me going to a funeral. Because
mm-hmm.
that's the only time I went to that church, was for a funeral, similar to what you said. And then it happened. That is where I decided to start publishing my own books, because the person who had died was the woman who was my mentor, who published my very first article, Mary Fitzpatrick. And I felt like, and I was confused, and I said, help me, please. And I hear this voice, and it was her. So that is what happens in a church when you least expect it. And I've been back to that church several times and made several friends. It's about community, too. You know, the history of what these churches have done is unbelievable.
Right.
And a lot of people don't know the history. And that's another reason why I wrote these books, is to open up a world that you pass every day.
Right. You know, the church that I was playing in and was part of the school that I was by was where they had a convent right next door, and it was Immaculate Sisters. And I remember that was probably one of the foremost in Pennsylvania. And it's, of course, not there anymore. And you almost find that it's kind of lost its sense. You know, there used to be the rectory, the church,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then the convent, you know, in a line. And then the school. So four buildings were on this block. And it's almost like you see how the churches have evolved these days, and we say, where are people going now? What are they doing? And are they drifting away, or are they drifting to something? So we kind of almost don't even know what's happening with people these days. And the churches have been locked up. Many of them have been dismantled. I mean, after Katrina here, I mean,
mm-hmm.
most of the churches, they were just... they're gone. I mean, it's just, they just don't show up, and they use the excuse, well, there's not enough money to pay for them, and there's not enough people around to come and support them, you know, yet they were still so important, and they were really needed at the time. And it was almost like people felt shortchanged. They were angry. They were kind of looking for that, and it wasn't here, right?
Yeah, but, you know, in my first book, Hallowed Halls of Greater New Orleans, I felt the same way. I felt
mm-hmm.
sad because, I've always been enamored with historic architecture. And so I did some research, and it's amazing because we have such creatives here in New Orleans, what they're doing with some of these closed, shuttered churches. You know, one of the biggest success stories is the Marini Opera House. And, you know, it turned a church into an opera house and plays, and they have weddings there. And there's so many other things that they've converted churches into other businesses to save the church. And it's funny because people who used to go to that church will feel like, you know, well, it's not gone. I know it's not my church anymore, but at least they didn't take down the building.
But there is a
renaissance going on now in New Orleans, and some of these churches, the ones that are here, a lot of the parishes have been consolidated, so a lot of these churches have gone through some restorations, much needed restoration, so that's a good side too. The thing I don't like, though, is many of them are locked. You know, of course, St. Louis Cathedral is open. Immaculate Conception Church on Barone, which is across the street from the back of Roosevelt Hotel, I want to recommend to your listeners to take a walk in there. It is usually opened all day because it's in a tourist district as well. And it's a beautiful church, in my opinion, a lot more elegant than St. Louis Cathedral.
You know, it's let's talk for a little bit about cemeteries now. You know, I grew up with cemeteries. There was one right next door. I can remember tiny, tiny child, you know, going in and laying in there, you know, laying under this, the great trees that were in there next to the tombstones, not thinking anything of it, you know. Hey, I would go in and lay in the grass and lay there all day long. You go and call me lay in the house later, or that's where I am, you know. And I think sometimes so many people believe that it is a place of sadness so much and sorrow that they can't see everything else that's there. And sometimes I think we get stuck in the concept of what a cemetery really is, or all the different types of cemeteries there are. Our family is all, many of the ancestors are on two different cemeteries because, you know, what your last name, you go over here, your last name, you go over here kind of idea. And it really ended up splitting up, you know, husbands and wives, because one might have been one ethnic group and the other ethnic group couldn't go there, so they went to the other one, you know. So I think sometimes we look at so many different diverse concepts when we think of that word, cemeteries, yes?
Oh, definitely. And also a lot of different funerary architecture. That's the name of the, especially here in New Orleans, that's the name of, as you mentioned, you have different cultures that built, you know, different things. For example, you know, you have a lot of above ground, tombs here, which were mainly designed from the European architects. And what's ironic is the architects in France and Europe said to themselves, wait a minute, I can build a lot more tiny houses, in quotes, there in America, Louisiana, than I can make more money than I can in Europe and just build one house. And so they came down and they worked. And so a lot of people in the 1800s thought it was, besides the fact of the water table in New Orleans, they thought it was chic. You know, it was, oh, we have, you know, how we have a place to live forever after that resembles the European cemeteries. And also they resemble some of the houses that they lived in. Some of these little tombs look like what we call here shotgun houses or Creole cottages or whatever. So it is, in fact, their forever home. And that's what, to me, I see beauty, I see architecture, I see love when I go to these cemeteries. And then a lot of places in the South, and I'm sure in the North too, the ones I've seen in Boston have tons of trees. and the roots are intermingling with the people below the ground. And I think that's a beautiful thing, too. It's very spiritual for me to see, you know, everybody coming together, so to speak.
It's almost like a place of celebration. It's a place of joy. It's a place of change.
Yes.
It's a place of everything. And when you see, as the world changes, you know, moss starts to grow onto the, some of the stones, and then the stones start to decay into the ground, and then you look and you say, where did the cemetery go? You know, it's sort of like the evolution of life. It truly is. And we want to capture and keep and keep and hold on and hold on, when kind of like just let nature take its course and let's let life take its course kind of idea, right?
Yes. I mean, of course, here in New Orleans, we have Save Our Cemeteries that are working desperately to save the architecture.
Right.
And that's a problem, too, is a lot of the families either die out or move away, and some of them mm-hmm. don't even know they have ancestors that are buried down here. And then there are also, and I mentioned it in my Spirits of the Bayou book, there's also a lot of movement, as many people know, to go away from the big fancy funerals and the mm-hmm. embalming and the expensive, you know, caskets and everything else, and do a more natural burial. You know, you can become a tree now. You can actually be planted, you know, with trees. And then in Canada and parts of Europe, it's space reserved just to throw the ashes. And even here on the North Shore, there are some Episcopalian churches that have some ground where you can spread the ashes, and then a plaque with all the different names of the people when the ashes are spread. So people are looking at different ways to honor their families.
You know, it's so different because when we think we want to find and we want to grasp at our heritage, you know, we look at, we want to go visit cemeteries, we want to find our ancestors, we want to look on Ancestry.com, we have to know where we came from. And sometimes it's just a time to say, they forget about living in the present. You know, that there's so much backward looking that being in the present and really creating good things is, you know, is sometimes is like, you know, really feeling good in the place you're in, really feeling, creating community where you live, really being able to support everyone that's around you is really taking more preference now versus always looking back, you know, kind of idea. It just seems like it's becoming more of a shift, you know?
Yeah, and I think right now it's interesting. If you would have a psychiatrist look at it, they would have an answer for it. But it's almost as if there is this huge trend not only to know what has happened in our family, but also a huge interest in history and in the planet, how things were, you know, what did they look like before, and climate change could have a part of that. In my tree book, I found it interesting. I happened to have he was a fisherman, and he told me a story of how in Gulf Shores, Alabama, in the you know, Gulf right off of the shores of Alabama, they found an ancient prehistoric forest under the ocean, and it was discovered after a hurricane had gone in there and just stayed there. Hurricane Ivan, I think it was. And uncovered it. And there are people from all over the world, Japan, I mean, Asia, Europe, everywhere, that are coming down to this little bitty town and doing all kinds of research and learning so much. Perhaps it's because if you know more about your past, you know more about the present, and hopefully it'll be education for the future.
I think it's also, too, about the mystique, though, also, is that we don't just think about human bodies and our existence. We think about, like we said, you know, as you said with the hurricane, you know, it's knowing more about how the water can shift, how it can change, how, you know, knowing things from birth to death in your book, you know, knowing how trees grow and how they nurture a forest, knowing mm-hmm. how trees can come back, you know, and have resilience. All of this is really telling us that we're not separate from the nature world of the earth. We're actually part of it. And how to be able to co-mingle with that. That's really the whole topic about that we're talking about today is how do you exist in the world around you? Because you are part of it versus I'm just a human being and all that's out there, you know?
Right. And you need to become more involved. And I'm not necessarily saying in politics. I'm talking about more involved in the world around you in the natural part. Because if you do, you will be a stronger, better person.
Right, because it'll just be like, you know, you won't be devoid of that force and that nature and that, as I've said before, you know, when a lightning strikes, you know, go out and breathe it in just to be able to enjoy mm-hmm. what it has to offer. You know, I think it's very interesting when we sit down and we think about topics like this, Deborah, because so many times people will say, they pass it by. So what we're really doing today is encouraging people to check out things like trees, forests, be able to go out and walk in the park. Go see a cemetery. What does it tell you? What does it feel like when you walk
right,
in there?
Right.
I used to jog in there all the time. I mean, that was my favorite place to jog. I would either
jog around
the lake or in the cemetery.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. was my place.
Mm-hmm. Because cemeteries are peaceful.
Right.
No, they really are. And most have trees. And I know the Metairie Cemetery here in New Orleans, they even have fundraisers where they have, you know, jogging events and running events to raise money for various local entities. But, yeah, you can do parks, you can do the woods, you can do cemeteries, you can do churches. They all bring you to the same place.
Absolutely. Well, Deborah, we've come to the end of our time today. It was such a pleasure to have you with us. Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you and all of your works?
Yes, probably the best place to go would be my website, which is Deborah Burst, and it's spelled D-E-B-O-R-A-H. burst.com. I have not only my books and the descriptions, but also photo galleries because I am a photographer and I do all the photos in my book. Then I'm, of course, I'm on Facebook under the same name and Instagram, so you can find me in a lot of different places. And I do post daily. And I also have a love for plantations. Well, the historical. Architecture and things of that nature. So, and I'm also a freelance writer and travel writer. So you'll be seeing more of those things too.
Well, Deborah, it was such a pleasure to have you with us here today because I think we alert people to say that the world is so expansive. It's just kind of cool to get out there, right?
That's right. Enjoy it. Discover
That's
it.
Right. Thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you with us.
Same here. Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more information about Deborah Burst, again, the books we talked about today are Spirits of the Bayou, Sanctuaries, Cemeteries, and Hauntings, and The Magical World of Trees. They love, nurture, and communicate. Please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page and go directly to her websites for more information. And check out all of her social media because she does post all the time and there's always something interesting there and might just be what you need for that day to be able to bring you some peace and to say, you know what, it's a grander world. I need to shut off this computer and I need to get my butt outside. So thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.